Hello, this is Anil Kumar from Back to the Bible radio broadcast. Today we continue our series with Dr. Neufeld entitled The Greatest Sermon Ever Preached on Matthew chapter 5 to 7. Today we will listen to a message called Salt and Light from our passage in Matthew chapter 5 verse 13 to 16. Now let's go back to the Bible with Dr. John Neufeld.
Years ago, I heard a story that I've not been able to verify, and so I'm assuming it's an urban legend, but it's an interesting story. The story goes that a math student had not been able to be in class and wondered what his homework was, and as he got to the empty classroom, he found an equation left on the board and assumed it was the homework. So he set out to solve the problem and found it exceptionally difficult. He finally did get it done, but it was by far the hardest math problem that he'd ever solved. Later, at least so the legend goes, his math professor informed him that the equation was not homework, but an example of an unsolvable math problem that no one had ever been able to solve. And of course, the point of the story is that when you don't know something's impossible, you might accomplish the impossible. Well, so much for a story used in countless motivation seminars, but I use this as an example of something of a very different kind of a problem. Many Christians think this to be impossible. I'm referring to the impact the gospel can make on the world and on nations and on individual cultures. I don't know what it is, but some of us have simply been programmed to believe that things are going to go from bad to worse in our country. And so we function with the mindset that nothing but nothing can prevent the downward slide towards a more secular, more immoral, and a more godless culture. We simply have the mentality that more and more people will reject the gospel and its implications. Now, against that mindset, I hear Jesus' proclamation in the Sermon on the Mount. I'm reading Matthew 5, 13 to 16. You are the salt of the earth, but if the salt has lost its taste, how shall its saltiness be restored? It is no longer good for anything except to be thrown out and trampled under people's feet. You're the light of the world. A city set on a hill cannot be hidden, nor do people light a lamp and put it under a basket, but on a stand, and it gives light to all in the house. In the same way, let your light shine before others so that they may see your good works and give glory to your Father who is in heaven. Now, when we read that, I think it's important to point out that Jesus did not give this teaching as an imperative or a command. It comes to us in the indicative. He's not telling us what we should strive to be, that is, salt and light. He is telling us that we are salt and light. Remember that in the early part of his sermon, Jesus is giving a character description of those who belong to his kingdom. Initially, he described the character of his disciples, but now he describes their impact. They are salt and light. Now, I think that the two metaphors, that of salt and light, although they are similar, actually speak of two different realities. So let's start with the first. You are the salt of the earth. You know, in the ancient world, salt would represent three different things. The first was purity, and this came about from the process of using seawater, then allowing it to evaporate, and then the salt remain. Hence, salt was what happened after you purified it of water. But I'm fairly certain that this is not what Jesus was driving at, for it would make no sense for him to say that you're the purity of the earth. Clearly, he's speaking about how the Christian influences the world, not what's left after the earth disappears. A second way salt was used was very much as it is used today, as a flavor. But again, it seems unlikely that Jesus was saying that his followers were the flavor of the earth. And so it seems likely that Jesus was saying that his followers were the preservative of the earth. You know, in the ancient world there was no refrigeration. Meat would be cured and stored in salt to prevent or to slow the process of decay. And so it seems to me that Jesus was giving an image of the world and of the unique role that believers were going to play in it. From Christ's perspective, the world is in decay. He's implying that there are destructive forces operating in all societies that will eventually pull down and destroy every one of them. But not only in individual societies, but in the world as a whole. It's moving towards dissolution, towards complete destruction, and in that sense, we're right. Things are moving from bad to worse. and this in opposition to an evolutionary view of human culture. Because we live in a day when technology and the sciences and medicine and inventions are progressing at an incredible pace, it might seem rather natural to assume that we are improving. After all, people say, we've put an end to slavery, we're making strides in defeating racism and sexism. Democracy is a form of government that forces leaders to listen to people. On and on the argument goes. And I was receiving a haircut not long ago, and the barber was making just that point with me. He claimed that we had fewer wars than in past generations. He lauded the fact that there was no longer a military draft, which must mean that in spite of the problems that our world faces, we are more secure, we are more prosperous, and human beings are about to break into the sunlight of the more ideal world. While it is possible to be an eternal optimist, a little thought shows us a far different picture. We now have the technology to destroy all life in a matter of minutes. And just when a few nations on Earth were determined to ensure that the nuclear club remains a contained group, that group is in fact growing, and among some of the most extremist nations on Earth. The truth be told, that the world has become a global village, and the world is now desperately divided. Add to that the worry of global pandemics that can't be contained. Add to that the reality that persecution against Christians and others is reaching unprecedented levels as increasing levels of hostility against those who hold different viewpoints is reaching new levels. We also have technology that allows governments to be more intrusive into the private lives of people. Religious intolerance is the major issue in the world today. There seems to be a boiling anger in the Middle East and also in the West, as more and more people feel both threatened and angry. See, I could speak about growing economic indebtedness of nations, about the amount of mistrust people in the West are expressing about their traditional democracies, about an anger that the wealthy have too much power. But in truth, the world of today feels like a massive powder keg. It takes no imagination at all to believe that the earth is groaning and that it is in great decay. And Jesus, who announced his kingdom, a kingdom that will stand after all the kingdoms of this earth have fallen, also expresses his concern for the kingdoms of this world. After all, God so loved the world that he gave his Son. And to a world in decay, Jesus looks at the subjects of his kingdom and says, "You're the salt of the earth. Your presence in this world of decay will act as a preservative. Your presence is an act of the grace of God in a world that is headed for chaos and destruction." And now to the principal question. How do followers of Jesus, the citizens of his kingdom, act as salt in the world? Now, we must be honest. Jesus doesn't actually say how. But the rest of this sermon will indicate that the moral center of Christ's followers provides an alternative to that in the world. Let me suggest just one idea, and I think this to be a very relevant topic in our world. I think it would be an understatement to say that we're witnessing in our culture the destruction of the family. The first stage of this destruction was the sexual revolution. Once the pill had been invented, many thought that anyone could engage in sexual relations without any consequences whatsoever. And if there were diseases, well, we'd solve that as well. Sex before marriage, sex after marriage, and extramarital relations, polygamy making a comeback, homosexuality being blessed and normalized, the celebrating of new transsexual human beings, all of this is not now just a phenomenon, but it is the center of our culture as it happens today. Abortions, broken families, incurable sexual diseases, and more is all now destroying the building blocks for a stable human culture. Jesus, the great king of a kingdom that will never pass away, not only calls for stable sexual relations within marriage, he heaps utter scorn on lust. What our world considers natural, he considers a sin worthy of hell. And in the midst of a decaying culture, he establishes a new humanity, which is not only countercultural, its presence witnesses hope of something other, something that answers the longing of the human soul. And of course, Jesus says, if the salt has lost its saltiness, what then? You know, some have suggested that what was then popularly called salt was in fact a white powder. Perhaps it came from around the Dead Sea, which, while it contained sodium chloride, also contained other ingredients, since in those days there were no refineries. Of this dust, the sodium chloride was probably the most soluble component, and so it was easily washed out. What remains, or the residue, still looked like salt, and in popular language, it was still called salt, but it had lost its saltiness. It was thrown out, it was road dust, and Jesus is saying that if his followers only looked like salt, but no longer were, the earth itself would be robbed of a great blessing. More when we come back.
If we just take a look around us today, it's not hard to see the truth of Jesus' words. Our society is in a state of decay. That is why the ushering of His kingdom was and is so vital to the present and future of humanity. We are learning that to be a Christian means to be the salt of the earth. Through our words and actions, we model Christ and thus preserve a way of life that stands out from the rest of the world. Join us tomorrow as Dr. Neufeld helps us understand what it means to be the light in a dark world.
Back to the Bible, leading people into a dynamic relationship with God. By now, many of you have probably heard or received our Bible teaching resource called Confident Living Magazine. This is sent once in 2 months. This magazine offers even more engaging Bible teaching articles from qualified Bible teachers and writers. It has articles that are relevant to life and exclusive updates on the ministry of Back to the Bible. The magazine addresses on difficult issues of life and your journey with God. If you have not asked for your copy of Confident Living Magazine, then don't delay. So be sure to ask for your personal copy. Call us at 9492-440070. Call us at 9492-440070. Or send your request by email info@backtothebible.in.